It's time for Cadillac On Call on News Radio 610 KONA. It's your chance to learn valuable health information right here in our community. Now, the host of Cadillac On Call, here's Jim Hall.
Good evening and welcome to Cadillac On Call, presented by the Foundations at Cadillac. On tonight's program, the very difficult topic of sexual assault and the help available for patients at hospitals like Cadillac Regional Medical Center. Cadillac's emergency departments have specially trained nurses who are equipped to care for patients when they come to the hospital following a sexual assault. The nurses are known as SANE nurses, S-A-N-E. The acronym stands for Sexual Assault Nurse Examiner. And I'm pleased today to welcome to our program Marissa Gomez. She's a Cadillac emergency room nurse, as well as the SANE program coordinator at Cadillac. Marissa, first of all, thanks for taking the time to share your expertise about this important topic. Why don't you just begin by sharing for our listeners the purpose behind SANE?
So the purpose behind SANE and sexual assault nurse examiners is to give patients and survivors a safe place to go following an assault. Assault is one of the most traumatic things that you can experience. And allowing those patients to have a safe place to go where someone can take care of you, provide you resources, provide you evidence collection if that's what you want to do, and just give you all the options so that you can rewrite your story.
Now, we've talked about this acronym, which it sounds like it's fairly self-explanatory, but I know there's a fair amount of education and training that goes into it for you and your colleagues who have this particular specialty.
Yeah, so our SANE nurses are primarily ER nurses, so they do the ER training first. After that, they have elected to do 40 hours additional training at minimum. So that's just the starting point. Training includes things on adult sexual assault, pediatric sexual assault, human trafficking, domestic violence, interpersonal violence, et cetera.
Now, I know behind your name, a lot of folks in the healthcare profession have RN and MD and all of the different certifications that you hold, and SANE. But I noticed on yours you also had DV and HT. Am I guessing is that domestic violence as well as human trafficking training as well?
That's correct, yes. Domestic violence and human trafficking as well as the sexual assault.
So what maybe let's all of those obviously are interconnected, but maybe take the domestic violence piece first of all. I would assume that in many cases, when there are sexual assaults that present in the emergency department, they could be folks that are victims of domestic violence. Talk a little bit about that.
Yeah, so they could go hand in hand, and they also could be separate. Domestic is an assault or a violence that's happened any time within the home, within the family, anybody that you have lived with. So it goes beyond just a husband, wife, or like a marriage. It goes mother, son, daughter to father. It could be anybody in the household. A lot of our domestic violence training focuses on the really violent acts that occur in the home, hitting, strangulation, anything that would lead to any abuse, but that also includes sexual assault. It's very common statistically that if there's domestic violence going on in the home, there's also sexual assault going on in the home. And so we really focus on both aspects of it to make sure that those who are experiencing either or both are able to receive those resources.
And then relative to human trafficking, I mean, just all of these terms and all of these episodes are just horrendous, obviously, but the human trafficking piece, share us a little bit about that and what you know about that as a nurse.
Yeah, so with human trafficking survivors and victims, statistically, they present to the emergency department about 5 to 7 times, or not just the emergency department, medically. They present to a medical office or hospital 5 to 7 times prior to disclosing that they are a victim of human trafficking. So they are seeking out for help in various forms without explicitly saying it. So our training is based on what symptoms, red flags that we're looking out for, repeat visits that would indicate that maybe someone is in danger, and then being able to identify, treat, and provide those resources as well.
How did you choose to go down this path of your nursing career?
So I knew I always wanted to be an ER nurse. for quite some time. When I took on the ER job, I actually was unaware that this was a service that we offered at all. And I found that was pretty similar with a lot of my colleagues, that until we took on the ER nursing, we didn't know that that's something that we did. During my training, I had a really amazing preceptor who educated me and encouraged me to take the additional class to see what I could do. And so I started with that. About 6 months into my ER career, I took that class, and I just really found a passion for it. I found that there was a need in the community, and I know that we really need to do our best to grow it and provide. So I kind of took a leap at that point in time. I took over the program about 2 years ago. We have gone from about 4 same trained nurses to 20 now, which is really great. And so those girls are the ones that keep me going and keep me inspired to do the work that I do. And it really is an honor to do this job.
I bet it is, but it has to also be difficult, no matter what the instance that you're encountering. You've been doing this for 2 years. Have you seen the incidents that come into the ER, more of them? Would that indicate that there's more of an issue, or is it just the awareness that people are taking the time to understand and go, I want to go get help?
So looking at the statistics since I took over the program, and from the year of 2020 to 2021, there was about 54 sexual assault kits that we collected. That evidence collection specifically, the metric of the exam is a little bit harder to measure, but I imagine it's quite larger than 54. And then in the last year, from about April to April now, we've done about 71. So we are growing, but I do think it really stems from people being aware of their resources. This is very common and happens a lot, and it's been happening a lot consistently over the last few years. So we know this is something that's always been a problem, but now people are more aware and more comfortable and feel more safe to present to somewhere where they can provide you those resources. So as we see an increase in numbers, it's not as discouraging as it would be if you saw an increase in something like the occurrence of it. It's more encouraging that survivors are reaching out and trusting us and getting those resources that they need.
That's a really interesting point, and it leads to me to another question of what is the biggest reluctance of people to want to do it? Is it just to admit that they may have been assaulted, or just taking that leap to come and, you know, to overcome that someone might be threatening them, so to speak?
There's various reasons. Everyone processes trauma a little different. So there can be reason that there's fear behind it. There could be some embarrassment or shame. Anytime you talk about any kind of sexual act or sexual violence, there is some embarrassment and some privacy that comes with that. And then also, there are people who their trauma response is just blocking it out. Their brain protects themselves by just saying, I can't deal with this. I'm going to pretend like this never happened. And so they are less likely to disclose because that's their brain truly protecting themselves.
Interesting. And I was going to say, by the time they make the decision to come into the emergency department, that's certainly the move that you want them to take. But do you know in your 2 years of experience in this role where you're seeing this more concentrated, that people, what led them to finally make the leap and make the effort to go, gosh, I'm going to go to the ER and get the help I need?
So a lot of people, surprisingly, when I see them, will say, I looked up on the internet what I should do, and this is what they said to do. They said to either call a law enforcement officer or to go to the hospital. And so one of the really great things about going to the hospital is that you don't have to make a police report to participate in any of our services. That is an option you can choose, but a lot of people will choose to go to the hospital because they know they don't have to make that decision right then and there. There are so many decisions and so many emotions that are going through their head that they simply know that they can come to us and get an exam, get the resource, and if they want to go the police route, they can, and we will certainly navigate that for them. But another great thing is if they choose to do evidence collection with us and they don't report, they hold on to it. And so if they at a later date are able to process what's going on and change their mind, they can.
We're visiting with Marissa Gomez, a SANE trained nurse at Catholic Regional Medical Center. SANE standing for Sexual Assault Nurse Examiner, and a whole assortment of Marissa and her colleagues have this special training, and sadly it's necessary, but optimistically and positively we're happy that it's there. Marissa has agreed to hang around for another segment to visit more about this important topic.
You're listening to Cadillac on Call on 610 KONA. This program provides general information only. Any comments or information presented are strictly for educational purposes. Cadillac and 610 KONA do not endorse any of the suggestions made by the presenter or callers. Now back to Cadillac on Call. Once again, Jim Hall.
Welcome back to Cadillac on Call, presented by the Foundations at Cadillac. We're talking about the treatment available in our community, and specifically at Catholic Regional Medical Center, for victims of sexual assault. And we're visiting with Marissa Gomez, an emergency room nurse at Catholic and the program coordinator for SANE, which stands for Sexual Assault Nurse Examiner. And Marissa, I'd like to pick up the conversation, if you would, about the partners that you have in the community beyond just the emergency department. When someone comes in and accesses the services in the emergency department, should it lead to further examination physically, and I guess further potentially assistance out there? What other partnerships exist to help people cope and get through this trauma?
So our program would not exist without having those community members that we work alongside with. A couple to name them: SARC is our Support Advocacy and Resource Center. Right off the bat, everybody who walks in for a sexual assault exam has the right to an advocate. SARC has advocates that are on call 24/7, and so they actually will come to the hospital and sit with the patient if they would like to, have them there and help them, have a support person for the exam to help them navigate what steps are next, to go through the paperwork, and to help them keep track of everything. We work closely with SARC. Mirror Ministries is a great program that we have in the Tri-Cities that works with commercially exploited individuals, such as human trafficking. Mirror Ministries, we actually just did a tour of them, and we're just amazed by the things that they provide as well. There's also the domestic violence services that are available as well to reach out to. So our goal at the end of all of the medical stuff is to set up our survivors with a long-term plan, a long-term goal. Where do we go from here? How do we make sure you're safe? What follow-up do you need? And how can we make sure that this is the best experience that you could have coming out of something like this?
You'd mentioned the training that you and your colleagues have gone through. I know there's the medical part of it, but how important, and talk a little bit, if you would, about the emotional training that you're provided and probably already have. It's just putting it into action as part of that process.
So anyone who works in a traumatic job, you've got a risk for something that's called vicarious trauma. It's something we've been learning a lot about, especially in the medical field and post-COVID, that it's the idea of it is that you experience trauma, and not from your own personal experience, but from helping someone very closely who is going through it. And so you are experiencing this trauma through them and with them. And so with all of that, we have started to kind of build our own emotional awareness and emotional intelligence and knowing what affects us and what doesn't. I think a big part of our job in the emergency department, no matter what kind of trauma it is that we prioritize. We shut a lot of it off because we know that our task that's in front of us is what's important. And so our safety and our care for that patient is number one at that time. So we do shut it off in the moment. But afterwards, we really focused on debriefing as a team, making sure to reach out to our own personal resources when we need it. Myself has reached out to different kind of therapies just to help me kind of process the things that I'm going through. And by doing that, because we're able to be aware of our own emotions, we can actually care for our patients better.
That's an interesting point and so well stated. And I think I have heard, especially in the last few weeks, we've had, unfortunately, these mass shootings across the country, and I've heard more frequently where they're interviewing emergency room doctors and emergency room nurses about what they're seeing and what that's like. And, you know, not to get political here, but obviously what you see, you and your colleagues in the emergency departments, is, you know, beyond just the treatment. You know, you're dealing with families that are left behind, and there's just so much more to it than just the pure treatment of the patient, right?
Yeah, there is. And every person that I have the chance to either train or have a conversation with that's in the medical field, I make sure to tell them to allow yourself to feel those emotions. It's very easy to be in a position like we have to shut it off and then never turn it back on. And that's kind of where you get into trouble, is that you are repeatedly exposed to these things and you never allow yourself to process it. So we really become better as professionals when we don't shut it off completely, that we're able to kind of compartmentalize and prioritize, but also take care of ourselves.
But back to the particular issue at hand that we're addressing with this sexual assault victims, of how important is it for you? You talk about you, obviously, as nurses get invested and staff get invested in these cases, but I'm sure that just means so much to the patients that they're clearly at a vulnerable time, that they have someone like you, not only professionally trained medically, but also has that compassion to be able to provide.
Yeah, so it's important to build that relationship and to know that it doesn't necessarily end there. With our role, if the survivor chooses to go to court, we actually testify in court on their behalf as well. So we really stand behind the, you don't have to do this alone. We will make sure that you have someone with you. And when it comes time for us to step back in, we will be there and we will make sure to keep our word and support you. In that time, you just desperately need somebody in any way, shape, or form. It looks different to everybody, but we're able to just ask you what is best for you. What do you want to do here? How do you want to change this story? I'm going to allow them to guide what we're doing here.
Two more questions before we let you go. The first one is, what is the hardest thing for people to do to make that step to come forward? Is it the fear of retribution, or is it just more I feel ashamed for coming forward?
I would say the number one thing that I hear is that they're afraid that somebody is not going to believe them. Unfortunately, in the society that we live in the past, there have been a lot of situations where survivors are not believed. And we really need to change that narrative. And so when someone comes in and tells me that they have fear that they're not going to be believed by any kind of person who's going to be involved in their team, the first thing that we say is, I believe you. My job is to be here to believe you and to stand behind you.
Well, you were so eloquent in how you describe it. And I would just ask you to maybe have one final question for you, is what is your message to listeners to this program, someone who may be facing just what you're talking about and is reluctant to come forward? What is your message to someone like that might be listening, and maybe to the general public who happens to be listening?
So my message to those who are listening, if you have experienced this, I do want, first of all, to say that I'm sorry this happened to you. It is not your fault. And if you need help, please reach out for it, because we do believe you and we will help you. For those in the community who are just looking to make a difference, the best thing you can do is get the word out. Abuse and assault are not things that we can keep quiet. And there's a sense of privacy and embarrassment that surrounds these topics. And so though this is a difficult conversation to have, it's a very important one. So the more that we're aware of the statistics, the resources, the terminology, what we can do, the more we can help. And this is really is going to protect and prevent and provide for everybody in our community.
And maybe one last question for 10 or 15 seconds. Optimistically, it's nice that there are all these resources in this community.
Yes.
But maybe talk about that, the fact that we have these partnerships available.
Yeah, so it is quite great that we have those resources. This is one that some communities don't have, And I have been so fortunate to be a part of every single one. So no matter what path you want to go down, if you want to talk to an advocate, if you don't want to talk to an advocate, if you need a place to stay, a safe place to go, these are all resources that we can set up for you before you leave the emergency department. We are not going to let you go without the things that you need. So really trust the community, trust us, even when it's difficult, and we will make it happen for you.
Marissa Gomez, emergency room nurse at CADLEC, the program coordinator for SANE, Sexual Assault Nurse Examiner. Thanks so much.
You're listening to CADLEC On Call on 610 KONA. This program is not a substitute for direct consultation with your own healthcare provider. Always consult your healthcare provider for your specific condition, especially if you have or suspect you may have a medical problem. Now back to CADLEC On Call. Here again, Jim Hall.
Welcome back to CADLEC On Call, presented by the Foundations at CADLEC. And a reminder, if you missed any part of our program, CADLEC On Call is available on podcast. Just search CADLEC On Call wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts. On today's program, we are discussing the highly sensitive topic of sexual assault and how it's treated and addressed in the emergency room. At CADLEC, there are highly trained nurses on staff poised to compassionately and expertly care for patients when they come to the ER as a result of sexual assault. We'd like to continue the conversation on this topic now with Dr. John Matheson. He's the medical director of the CADLEC Emergency Departments, which consist of the ER on the main hospital campus in Richland, as well as the CADLEC Freestanding Emergency Department in Kennewick. Dr. Matheson, from your view, maybe what would you like our listeners, our community, to know about this difficult topic?
Well, first, thanks, Jim, for covering it. As you say, it's a difficult topic, but it's a very important one. I think in your description of the program and what our SANE nurses do, you highlighted in saying that they are cared for compassionately and expertly. It's important that as we care for anybody as we care for our patients, regardless of their condition or why they're there, we want to provide technically good, sound, competent care. But these are also very sensitive situations, and it's important that we provide compassionate care, that we treat these patients who have been through so much with dignity and respect and where they feel supported, not just from the medical side, but from the emotional side, and feel that support and are able to trust us to care for them. And I think that's the essence of this. It's providing good, sound care, but doing it in a very compassionate way and supporting these people beyond just their visit in the emergency department.
In visiting with Marissa in the first part of our program, she was sharing some statistical evidence that in the couple of years she's been involved, she has seen an increase in the number of patients coming in for care and treatment. But that's not necessarily indicative that the problem is increasing. It's just that the awareness and the maybe the desire to step forward and take the next step is people are feeling more comfortable.
I think that's true. The problem has been there for some time. Sexual assault and other types of violence and other types of assault are out there. They have been there. They have always been underreported. I'm not sure that it's happening more often, but we're grateful that it is getting more attention, that people are feeling more comfortable coming in to be seen and getting that help, that there's improved and greater awareness out there, that there are resources, and that when people come to access them, that they will be supported. Sadly, despite the fact that we are seeing more that get reported, we are seeing more that access these services, I still believe that there are far too many that are not reported, and people who still are afraid to come in, who feel that there's no point in coming in, that either harm will come to them or that they'll be ignored and not taken seriously, that nothing will happen as a result, or that they or they're just not aware that there are services to begin with.
Is there any, I guess that to me, the hard part in all of this is it could happen to anybody, any age, I'm sure, but certainly, you know, in the human trafficking arena that we hear more and more, we have that problem in this community, or there wouldn't be the need for organizations like Mirror Ministries and the like that help or a safety net. But just talk a little bit about, because these can be very young and vulnerable people, not just vulnerable people.
Absolutely. Yeah, I have become more informed about the issue of human trafficking in addition to these other topics, and have had the opportunity to speak about it, not just in our community, but other parts of the country as well. And it happens everywhere. It is happening here. Domestic violence, sexual assault, human trafficking are happening here. You touched on it, but it is, we tend to get a certain idea in our heads of who it's affecting, but it affects all genders, all races, all socioeconomic statuses, all ages. And it does happen. You asked about young people. Certainly the human trafficking, we see a lot of that in the young people, preteen and younger, it's quite prevalent. So is abuse, so is domestic violence, so is sexual abuse. And it's men, it's women, it's all, any demographic has been affected. And people may think that we live in a community where this type of thing is not as prevalent. Unfortunately, it is here. You don't have to be in the big city or elsewhere for it to happen. It happens here. We see it. We see it often. But even though, just going back to what I said before, we see it, but there are so many that occur that we don't see.
Relative to that, the numbers, and as you touched on, there probably is no real accurate way to determine those numbers. Is the issue just doing programs like this and raising awareness and helping people understand that if they're in this situation, that it is okay to come forward?
I think education and awareness is a huge part of this, making sure people understand that they aren't alone, number one, but also that there are resources, and that when they access those resources, they will be believed and supported. There are sad cases that we hear about from time to time of people, and I think more so in the past, but let's not fool ourselves and think that it never happens now. People who will report or say something and they get dismissed, and that's re-traumatizing them in many ways. And so it is awareness that we have resources and building that confidence and that trust that, okay, if I'm going to take this big step and make myself vulnerable by saying this is what happened, that I'm going to be supported and that the process is not going to punish me or penalize me or traumatize me again, which is, I think, the perception that too many have. And sometimes because that has happened in the past for too many people.
We're visiting with Dr. John Matheson, the medical director of the Catholic Emergency Departments, talking about the very difficult topic of sexual assault and having the courage and having the awareness to act and know that there is resources in the community, not only throughout the emergency room at Catholic and other healthcare facilities, but other community organizations that are part of the team to help in these very tragic and difficult times.
You're listening to Cadillac on Call on 610 KONA. This program provides general information only. Any comments or information presented are strictly for educational purposes. Cadillac and 610 KONA do not endorse any of the suggestions made by the presenter or callers. Now back to Cadillac on Call. Once again, Jim Hall.
Welcome back to Catholic on Call, presented by the Foundations at Catholic. We're visiting with Dr. John Matheson, the medical director of the emergency departments at Catholic Regional Medical Center. We have been shining the light on the compassionate and expert care available at Catholic for patients who come into the ER as victims of sexual assault. Dr. Matheson, I'd like to segue for a few minutes, if we could, to a topic I know is of personal importance to you, and that's the word resilience and helping colleagues in the healthcare profession understand the need to recognize and address symptoms of burnout and mental fatigue on the front lines of healthcare. And certainly the topic we've addressed today has to heighten that stresses on healthcare workers, and you add what we've been through the last 3 years, and maybe just give us some initial perspective on what it's like for you and your colleagues when having to deal with these incredibly hard situations.
Sure. And let me preface it by making sure that our listening audience understands that we don't want anybody to feel like they are a burden to us. We are here to help, and we're here to provide these services, and we do not want anybody to feel like they, by coming, as we talk about this, some of the challenges that healthcare, those in the healthcare field are facing, we don't want patients to feel like they're responsible or causing it. But it has been a challenging time. You know, medicine has always been something that causes us to deal with difficult circumstances. We have to deal with illness and death and dying and sadness and associated things all the time, and that's part of the job. On the other side, we get to deal with some wonderful experiences where we get to make a significant difference in people's lives for the better, and that brings great joy. I think that as we've been through the pandemic, and it's been well discussed in the past about some of the challenges that we've seen, shortages of staffing, lack of access to certain aspects of care, it has taken its toll on those who have provided that care. And as we move forward and we deal with some of these situations, we've just been talking about the sexual assault and violence and human trafficking. I think you referenced some of these shootings and other things. You know, we are humans as well, and I think it's important that we do feel these things. We try to separate ourselves to some extent, but we are human beings, and I hope I never stop feeling for my patients in those circumstances. And it does add up, and over time, it can take its toll and lead to burnout and some just personally difficult times.
I was going to say, throughout the pandemic, and then now as you talk about difficult topics like sexual assault, and then we touched on, you know, mass shootings that have happened far too often in our country lately, but I think the point you had made to me before we went on the air was that, you know, we see this kind of stuff every day. It's just not in the news per se. So you and your colleagues are dealing with these tragedies, if you will, and these very difficult situations every day. It just might be not to the high profile nature that we've come to know.
Correct. You know, we hear about these mass shootings and a number of people, and certainly those get attention and should get attention. And dealing with those are very challenging. But I say every day I'm dealing with people who are having the worst day of their lives. And it may not get attention, but people's lives are changed. It's not uncommon as I'm on my way to work to think about what I'm going to face. And I often think, how many people are going about their business and have no idea that we're going to meet? And certainly the majority of my encounters are not life and death, but some of them are. And as I say, virtually every day I work, somebody I'm encountering is having the worst day of their life. And it is an honor and a privilege to be able to connect with those people, to do what we can to help, to ease whatever we can, when we can, to reverse it, change the outcome, and so that it's not the worst day of their lives. but sometimes it is.
I would just ask you to maybe take this, your perspective, a little beyond your day-to-day world in the emergency department. And, you know, all of us have stresses in our jobs and days when they're difficult, not certainly not to the life and death degree that people do that work in hospital and healthcare settings or first responder type settings. But is there a lesson that we can all learn from what you and healthcare are going through to maybe strike some balance in our lives that might help us be healthier and be better citizens and just be better, more happy?
Sure. And it's not going to be the same for everybody, but I think it's important that everybody find something in their life that brings them joy and fulfillment and purpose, and to spend time doing that. And certainly connections are important. Not everybody has a family, and not everybody's family is their primary support, but it's important that we have those that we can reach out to, that we can be open with and have those connections with. And be vulnerable and receive that support. And it also helps when we can be that for others, because when we are reaching out and helping and serving, I find great satisfaction in that, and it builds me up. Those connections are critical. I find, you know, if I'm feeling down, I just have to look around me and recognize that I'm quite fortunate, and there are always others who are in need. So I think those are a few just top of mind. Find something that brings you meaning and purpose and fulfillment, and spend as much time in that activity as you can, and make connections with people that you can be open and honest and share with and support one another. And it doesn't fix everything, but I think that's a good starting point.
It's been a fascinating discussion tonight on a very difficult subject, and one that I think there are lessons for all of us beyond those who are in the life-saving business every day that we can all learn from. Dr. John Matheson, thanks so much, as always, for taking some time with us. Thank you for listening to Catholic on Call. We'll talk again next week.